The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter, with over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S. The CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chintpowersystems.com to find out more.
Well, I think the first thing is we're probably the only vendor right now that's really operating at a global scale. And by that, I mean we're operating in 70 countries. We are covering, we have 90,000 operators worldwide, right? So if you don't have your own operators or you don't want to take on that piece of the business, we can absolutely do that for you.
The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by the Clean Power Consulting Group. I'm Tim Montague, your host. Today on the Clean Power Hour, intelligent aerial imagery. My guest today is Mark Culpepper. He is the general manager of Drone Base, and we're going to learn all about his history in the solar industry and what they are up to in solar, wind, and other real estate. So welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you, Tim. It's a pleasure to be here.
Really good to see you and learn about Drone Base. And it turns out that I scratched the surface on your startup, Precision XYZ, a few years ago at my first SPI in 2018. So it's
That's good to see you again.
And now you have a new badge. But tell us a little bit about yourself. You have a long history in the solar industry. And how did you get interested in energy anyway?
Yeah, sure. So I got started back in, honestly, at the second Gulf War. So I'm a vet. I served in the Army and have always had an interest in security and issues like that. When the second Gulf War broke out, I really was thinking, man, I really got to do something. I was working in tech. My career had started in tech, data networking, data security, things of this nature. But I really wanted to feel like I was making a bigger impact. So, 2004, 2005, I spent a lot of time in my after hours doing research on the energy markets, not any specific technology, just energy in general. And, what everything seemed to be pointing back toward was solar as really the biggest resource for renewable energy, going forward. So in 2005, I went home one day from my job and I said to my wife, you know, I think I'm going to quit my job. And she said, you know, I think that's a bad idea. And I said, no, wait. And so we talked it through and I said, look, I think, this is a market that has a lot of legs to it. It's going to be a very, very big market over time. It's not going to be explosive like tech necessarily, but it is going to grow substantially in the decades ahead. And so we wrestled through that and she basically said, okay, let's go ahead and give it a shot. So I literally started cold calling value-added resellers for PowerLite. So Dan Sugar's company at that point, right? And I called a company out of Sacramento called Team Solar. It was run by Rick and Angela Lovezzo, husband-wife team. And Rick took me under my wing for some reason. And he said, all right, let's see. He goes, we've been doubling year on year for 5 years in terms of their business. And he said, we really need some help thinking through kind of what we're going to do next. And so he hired me as his VP of business development, and we started working on their business plan. Within, I'd say, 3 months of me starting, we got approached by two vendors for acquisition. One was Sun Edison. The other one was a company out of Germany called Conergy. If you remember those guys, yeah. And both made offers to the business. One was almost pure equity, which was Sun Edison. The other was almost pure cash, which was Conergy. And Rick asked me, he goes, well, what do you think? You know, Rick and Angela both asked me, and I said, well, look, you guys have been at this for 5 years. You mortgage your house, you put everything on the table. It's not really for me to tell you what to do. You know, you guys got to go with what your gut tells you. I will tell you this, you can never lose going to the bank. You know, so just purely from a business standpoint, you just take the cash. If you want to know where I think the industry is going, I think it's going toward the SunEdison model. You know, and that's probably the smart bet in terms of where the industry will be. And to their credit, they kind of put all their chips on the table and said, okay, we're going to go with SunEdison. And so that's basically how I got started. And because I had done work in product management and marketing, when I came into SunEdison, the first thing they needed was someone to run marketing, because they really didn't have any brand identity. They didn't have standard messaging, any of that stuff. So I basically rebuilt the brand pretty much from scratch with myself and I think one other guy on my team initially. And that was a really amazing journey, actually. The early days of SunEdison were pretty, pretty crazy.
I know SunEdison as the innovator of the power purchase agreement. Of course, Jigar Shah was the founder. Yeah. He's now the head of the loan programs office in the DOE and the founder of Generate Capital as well. Jigar's going to be a repeat guest in a couple of weeks, so looking forward to having him back on the show.
Yeah, tell him I said hello.
And but so is that how do you capture what SunEdison was up to at that time?
Well, I think SunEdison's a real innovation was, you know, to be able to go to a client and say, we're going to lower your energy costs and give you renewable power, and it's not going to cost you anything. That was a revolutionary thought. Like, that was the thing where everybody kind of thought, okay, what's the catch here? Like, what trick are you trying to play on me? And once people understood that there was no trick, they really, you couldn't contain the growth at that point. You know, we were growing as fast as we possibly could, you know. So I think SunEdison's model at the time, it wasn't necessarily new. They had PPAs in Europe, right? But it was new to the United States, and the concept was new in the United States. And I think for the way that solar had been traditionally sold in the U.S. up to that point, it was you bought a power plant, you didn't buy kilowatt hours. Right. And what we basically said is nobody really wants to own a power plant. They want the benefit, but they don't really want to own a power plant. And that's what we did. You know, we just built an entire model off of that premise.
Yeah. And as we know, that model is still very alive and well today.
Absolutely.
So fast forward to 2016.
Yeah.
And what was the idea behind Precision?
Yeah, so what happened was SunEdison, I started out as a head of marketing, and we didn't have a real tech structure inside the business. We didn't have a workflow management system. So the first thing that we would do is I would go out and market, you know, with Jigar and others in the business, and we would tell people, you know, don't buy the power plant, buy the kilowatt hours. And we had great press coverage. I mean, we're talking New York Times, Washington Post, NPR, you name it, we were on it, right? And the challenge that we had was we would get in these interviews, and I remember specifically, I think it was on NPR, said, well, how much energy have you produced? And we'd be like, well, you know, the sun comes up, the sun goes down, you know, it's really hard to tell at any given moment, you know. And the reality was we had, you know, five spreadsheets with five different numbers on them that all said, you know, March, right? And we really were not equipped to do everything that we were trying to do. So what I did was I just said, hey, look, someone's got to get a hold of this problem. And I just kind of grabbed it and started working on both the workflow, which is basically from the time we first touch a prospect to the time it turns into a deal. How does that work? And then after the project was built, how do we track production on the plant? As a result of my work in that, they basically promoted me into the CTO's office and said, look, Mark, we need you to build out a global asset management OMIM platform. So that's what we did. We built the seeds infrastructure. We built the ROCs, renewable operations centers. and really started to develop that infrastructure. And what we found was pretty interesting. In the early days, the concept of Iraq was new for the renewable sector. And power plants were underperforming. Our fleet was underperforming by about 2% at the time. And once we implemented the ROC, the first year we implemented the ROC, our average power delivery was 104% of rated capacity. So literally just by having people watching a screen and then looking for outages and dispatching crew to get it fixed, we got 600 basis points of performance, right? Just a huge, huge number increase. And we really weren't doing anything revolutionary. I mean, honestly, we were like, you know, the inverter's out, call Bob up. Hey, Bob, the inverter's out, go reset it. And that was it. You know? Now, the asset management and O&M side was pretty happy with it. The development side was like, we're selling our plants too cheap, right? Which is true. We were, you know. We were very, very tight on data collection and we're almost fanatical about getting really accurate data because we knew it would directly impact valuations. So the next year, our rated capacity was 102%, which is a little bit closer to where it should have been. And then every year after that, it kind of got closer to unity, right? But one of the challenges that we ran into as we were building out the fleet, you know, anybody who's run a large fleet, you know, we had in my organization when I left, I think we had about 160 people, both directly employed and indirectly employed, contractors and subs and such. But you would have power plants that were just trouble children, and you knew they were going to be trouble children almost from day one, from the first COD, right? And some of them we could not figure out. So we had some standard metrics that we tracked. We tracked something we called the investor's performance ratio. Is the investor at least hitting unity or slightly more than unity? We had what we call the operating performance ratio. Are we operating in line with the expectations of good operating procedures? And then the weather performance ratio. Like these three things you could use to basically tell the truth about a plant. And even when we applied these to some of our plants, we still couldn't figure it out. And we're like, there's got to be a module problem, right? And the only way at that time to really discern that was IV curve tracing, which is tedious and not terribly accurate and involves a lot of man hours in the field, or thermal scans. And at that time, you literally had to walk the field with a thermal gun and, you know, look at the first panel. Yep, this one's good, you know. No, this one's not good. This one's good. I mean, imagine doing that. Like, it's the definition of, you know, you want to put somebody in the bad box. You have them go do a thermal scan with a handgun on a million panels, right? So like, it's not the definition of a mean trick, right? So I was at a show in 2010 at Intersolar EU, and I saw one of the first drones equipped with a thermal camera. And I was like, that is what we need. Because we had a 10 megawatt plant up in Canada that was underperforming, and we'd gone through all the analytics and we couldn't figure it out. We're like, we need to figure, this has got to be a thermal problem or a problem with the modules. And when I saw that drone, I was like, this would really help us, you know. But the drone at that time, I want to say that drone was like 150 grand, right? It had a flight time of like 15 minutes. There was no way to legally fly it in the U.S. or North America. So there are some issues, right? but I remember thinking this is going to be big because these are going to go, they're going to get smaller, better, and cheaper. You know. So when I left Sun Edison in late 2011, I almost immediately started playing with drones on the side. You know, I had my day job, but at night I had buddies who were real estate developers and also realtors. And I would just say, hey, do you need a shot? And they'd be like, yeah, that's great. You know, so I played around with that for several years. And then, 2016, things had evolved far enough where myself and good friend of mine, Ed DeBoer, who's a pilot and has a lot of extensive experience with drones, we said, well, let's give it a shot. And almost immediately, we focused on the solar sector. And we focused everything from early stage development on topographic mapping, construction monitoring, where we do regular river flights of a site, and then thermal inspections on the plant's assets. So that's basically how we got started and really how PXYZ came into existence.
Yeah, I mean, I've had this same awareness much later. I got into solar in 2016, and just quickly realized that for monitoring construction, how wonderful it would be to just have a box with a drone in it that popped open on a daily basis, and the drone would fly, document what's going on, send that information back to headquarters, go back in the box, recharge, and be ready for tomorrow. Yeah. And it's amazing that this is still not really common. Yeah. Here we are in 2022. Now, drones, of course, are much more affordable, much greater flight time. I myself have a DJI Mini, which I've used to photograph my projects, and no license required, which is a wonderful thing because it's super light. It doesn't do well in the wind, which is a bummer because there's a lot of wind in Illinois.
Yeah.
So it's often a short flight, but anyway. So how did who were your early customers at Precision XYZ? And then we should get into the acquisition because we only have 10 minutes here.
Yeah. So our early customers really broke down into two categories, primarily topographic mapping and thermal inspections. And it was about 50-50 between those two. So about 50% of our business was topo mapping and the balance was in thermal inspections. On the topo side, it was developers and then people who were in the process of looking to build an asset. So they had already made the decision. They'd gone through NTP, but they wanted a good, more accurate topo map of the facility for the EPC team. Or they were early stage developers who were basically like, I know this target is viable. I just want to know how viable, right? So that was the topo side. On the thermal side, it was both asset owners and O&M companies. So we did about a gigawatt of thermal inspections in a little over 3 years. And, that's a lot with a drone for a very small team. We had built kind of a network of subs that we worked with. But the thing that I realized, and one of the things that I learned at Sun Edison and has been kind of a hallmark of my career, is how do you operate at scale? How do you really deliver value to a market at scale? Because if you're not operating at scale, you're probably not going to be able to sustain the business, right? So we had spent all this time doing drone logistics and doing these power plant scans. And what we realized was there's a better way to do this. And particularly as the scale of the industry was starting to ramp up. And not only was it better, but it was kind of mandatory. So a guy with a thermal gun, he might be able to scan up to 5 megs a day. That's really stretching it. That's 25,000 panels. Realistically, he's going to be closer to 1 to 2 megawatts a day. Guy with a drone can do 20 to 30 megawatts a day. When I first started at Drone Base, and by the way, as part of that evolution of PXYZ, what I realized was we're either going to have to raise money or get acquired. And we got approached by Drone Base, Dan Burton, the founder and the CEO. He said, Mark, we've been watching you guys for a while. We really like your platform. And we have a nascent thermal inspection business, but we really don't have a good platform right now. And we had developed a software platform and we had a lot of experience with the industry. And so we ended up selling the business in December of 2020 to Drone Base. And then we spent all of 21 basically building out our throughput capacity. The thing that was appealing to me about Drone Base was that they had a manned aviation component. They're called Drone Base, but 95% of our scans done annually are with manned aircraft.
I had Helialytics on the show yesterday. Quickly realized the importance of manned aircraft in the large solar field industry, right? The distances are vast. You can get to the site quicker, get between sites, and then, of course, fly the site.
Yep.
How many times faster in an airplane than a drone?
Well, like I was saying, with the drone, you can do 20 to 30 megawatts a day. This last year, our peak performance, we were 516 megawatts in 4.5 hours.
And we should, you know, we should make this distinction. We say manned aircraft, but actually, it's really about the size of the plane. You know, it's a fixed-wing aircraft.
Correct.
Most drones are more like helicopters.
Yep.
And... But there's also drones that are fixed-wing aircraft.
That's correct.
And I would imagine that eventually it'll move away from the manned components.
I think you're absolutely correct. And, I mean, part of this, too, is about that whole concept of operating at scale. You know, we'll do around 25 gigawatts, maybe a little more this year, of capture and processing. By this time, January of next year, basically, we should have throughput capacity in excess of 80 gigawatts, which means we'll be able to capture about 70% of the U.S. market, you know, for utility scale plans. Scalability means a couple different things, right? It's got to be simple because this is a pretty small portion of the O&M value chain. It's important, but it's a small portion, right? So that means it's got to be simple, easy to use, cost effective, quick, and accurate. Right. So as we looked at the operation, this just made a ton of sense to us. Now, there's a corollary to that, and that is that UAVs and drones are really useful for field teams. So we didn't see this as an either-or proposition. We run our manned aircraft on regular scans. We do a spring run. We do a fall run. And we basically cover large corridors. Right. Like I said, we did about 60,000 nautical miles last year. Right. So every major market in North America, with the exception of Mexico, Mexico, we cover with UAVs, and rest of world, we cover predominantly with UAVs at this point. So where you really want to use manned aircraft is in places where you have good density, or that are, highly concentrated in specific fields. So, you know, if you think about the big 10 gigawatt plant they're building in Northern Australia, the overall market for Australia is not that big, but just that plant alone is going to warrant the use of manned aircraft. It's just too large to do with UAVs, you know.
Because the range of the UAV isn't great enough, or what?
Yeah, I mean, like, think of it this way. You know, if you're doing 20 or 30 megawatts a day with a UAV, how many acres? I mean, how long are you going to be there, right? I mean, think about the Gemini plant just east of Las Vegas. That's 966 megawatts DC. You're doing 20 or 30 megawatts a day. You're there a very long time,
yeah.
Right, to scan the whole plant, as opposed to a manned aircraft. By the end of this year, we're probably close to a gigawatt a day for a manned aircraft in terms of data collection.
Okay.
Right? I mean, last year we were 516, so I expect we'll be
able to... So the aircraft is bigger with a manned aircraft than with a UAV?
Yeah.
I mean, the military is using UAVs.
True, true. There is nobody who's doing beyond visual line of sight with large unmanned aircraft in the North American market.
Okay.
In other words, the FAA won't allow that to happen. If
gotcha.
You're military, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But if you're a civilian operator, no one's quite got that trick locked down yet. There are several companies in logistics who are doing work on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect that we will start to see those unmanned aircraft show up probably in the next 3 to 5 years. You know? Mm-hmm. They'll tell you sooner. I think realistically, it's probably 3 to 5 year time frame.
It is kind of a Star Wars future. I've been, because of the war in Ukraine, I've been watching some military videos, and, you know, we now have really high-powered laser weapons, for example. The U.S. does. Not every military around the world has these, right? These are super expensive lasers. But you can imagine that would provide a level of safety if you have a bunch of UAVs flying around. The concern is terrorist acts or accidents. You know, these things flying into buildings or flying into other important assets, and potentially launching strikes, right? And then the countervailing force would be having really accurate laser weapons that could take those out at the push of a button. It's a very strange future that I'm discussing right now, but it is probably within reach technologically, whether we'll go there. you know, logistically and regulatorily, is another question. I don't know that I want to live in that world, but anyway, it's
like any technology. It's going to bring some challenges, and it'll bring benefits. You know, I think for logistics, if you think about the movement of material right now and kind of the jam up in the logistics food chain or supply chains, if we could open up drones as a potential supply vehicle for some of these markets, actually could make a big impact. You know, there's a company called Zipline right now, which has done a phenomenal job of delivering medical supplies, right, in emerging markets. There are other companies that are really, really interesting in terms of what they're doing in the logistics space. But I think that technology, that underlying technology, you know, being able to fly substantial drones, like big drones, almost military size, maybe not quite that big, but substantial drones over large swaths for inspection purposes, you know, whether that be for high value infrastructure like drone base does, or for agriculture or for other areas like that. I guarantee you 100% those services will be available in the next probably 10 to 15 years.
So what should asset owners and O&M companies and developers know about drone base that they may not know today?
Well, I think the first thing is we're probably the only vendor right now that's really operating at a global scale. And by that, I mean, we're operating in 70 countries. We are covering, we have 90,000 operators worldwide, right? So if you don't have your own operators or you don't want to take on that piece of business, we can absolutely do that for you. Whether your assets are deployed just in North America or if they're deployed North America, Asia Pacific, Europe, Middle East and Africa, Latin America, it doesn't matter. We've literally done jobs all over the place. We currently scan about 40% of the Indian market for utility scale, about 30% of the Australian market, and we are growing very fast in Europe and North America. So,
is that 10 gigawatt project under contract yet?
It's not under contract yet. That's on our target list, though. You can bet your down dollar. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You know, and we've got some other exciting stuff. I mean, we do cover the value chain. We do do comprehensive construction monitoring. We have ground-based tools that are literally like based off your smartphone called serial ID monitoring. So as you deploy modules, we can track every serial ID and give you the geolocation of every one of those modules. That all ties into construction monitoring, and that all feeds into thermal inspections for both asset owners and O&M companies.
Well, thank you so much, Mark Culpepper with Drone Base. We're out of time. I'm Tim Montague. Let's grow solar and storage. Thank you so much. The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter. With over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S., the CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chintpowersystems.com to find out more.